You are Locked On Pelicans, your daily podcast on the New Orleans Pelicans, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome to another edition of Locked On Pelicans, the daily podcast covering your favorite team, the New Orleans Pelicans, and NBA as a whole, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. I'm your host and Pelicans insider and credential member of the media, Jake Madison, at Nola Jake on Twitter, here with you all on this Thursday, and a happy Thursday as the Pelicans get a road victory 101-96 over the Charlotte Hornets, move to 26-21, five games over 500. They've won five out of their last six and are looking to finally get their first four-game winning streak of the season this upcoming Friday against the Houston Rockets. In the first segment, we're going to recap this game. Kind of a needed victory for the Pelicans, even though they've won five out of their last six. I'll tell you why when we talk about the game in just a moment. In the second segment, we're going to talk about the Cavs, some more national NBA stuff. This is a once-a-week segment that we'll be doing on Thursdays. I touched on some of it yesterday because there's just so much going on in the NBA right now. And then after that, we'll quickly touch on, you know, the trade deadline and kind of how to prepare yourselves for it. And maybe how you guys, because you definitely need to mentally prepare, right? How the Pelicans should maybe be approaching it, how I think they are approaching it, and get you set before we maybe touch on some specific trade targets for next week. So let's just jump right on into everything in today's edition of Locked On Pelicans, brought to you by MyBookie.ag. So the Pelicans won 101-96 in, like I said, this was a needed game, I think, more for what you saw from the Pelicans. You know, if they had gone 4-2 over the past six, I think people would have been okay, even though that loss to Atlanta still kind of really stings. But the Pels followed that up, as they usually do, with victories. So this game was needed because they didn't get very good performances all around and didn't really do anything they wanted to do in this game, at least to a grand extent, where they kind of imposed their will or played their game. And because of that, they still managed to get a victory. So you needed to see this from the team for them to kind of get a victory when things just aren't going their way. When you look at the box score with everything, and even watch them, you know, Anthony Davis, DeMarcus Cousins, Drew Holiday, offensively, did not have any great performances, to be honest. Davis only had 19 points, 6 rebounds. Cousins had 16 points, 13 rebounds. Holiday had 19 points, 4 assists. And so nothing too tremendous there, to be honest. You know, Cousins had 8 turnovers. That's not what you want to see. Rondo had 3. And the team as a whole turned the ball over 16 times, over that 15 mark that they like to kind of keep things at. They also scored just 38 points in the paint compared to Charlotte's 52. Charlotte getting a lot of that on second chance points, putbacks and tip-ins from Dwight Howard, who has played really good basketball over the past number of weeks at this point. Howard went off for 22 points, 16 boards. You don't want to see that at all from an opposing big when you have Anthony Davis and DeMarcus Cousins on the same team. Kemba Walker scored 20, had 7 assists. But the Pelicans still managed to get this victory. You got contributions from Etuan Moore, who chipped in 11 points. Rondo had 9. Dante Cunningham, who we don't even talk about on the podcast here, unless it's he's played terribly because he just never plays well, put in 9 points. Darius Miller had 8. Ian Clark had 2. Jameer Nelson had 8. You even saw an Omer Asik and DeAndre Liggins sighting in the second or third quarter, I forget which one, where the Pels survived 3 minutes with no Anthony Davis or DeMarcus Cousins on the court. That's huge. Normally, when those two sit at the same time, that's when opposing teams just kill the Pels, but they held on and did well today. Now, this team did not have a good third quarter, just 20 points in that, but it was matched by the ineptitude of the Charlotte Hornets, who also put up 20 points in the third quarter. So, cool. They were matched there. So still not ideal. That starting unit coming out of the third, it struggles very much at times. But when you're going up against a team that shoots 6 of 21 from 3, as Charlotte did, you can get a victory. And basically, that's kind of what it came down to. But you still needed to see this from this Pelicans team. somehow get a victory when things aren't going your way. Keep kind of grinding, keep trying to just get a point or a bucket here and there, what have you. And like I said, just kind of do it. I don't know how else to really explain it. And I was on the radio after the game on WWL with Seth Dunlap on double coverage talking about this. And it's just, maybe now you can see them turning a corner. And I said, you know, we're going to hold off on this. We're going to see how they do against the Rockets. Do they come out flat? Do they come out lifeless? Or do they show some fight, particularly because they're going to be at home? We've been here before with this Pelicans team 4 times already this year. And after the 4 3-game winning streaks, the fourth game in half of those 2 times has been bad losses to the Atlanta Hawks and the Dallas Mavericks. Can't have another loss. You've got to string wins together, which they're doing. 5 of 6 is very good. Let's not deny that. But you've got to prove to people you're turning a corner. You've got to prove it to yourselves as a team, I think, too, because no one is super ready to say, like, yeah, this team's going to compete. So when you look at the standings, they're in the 6th seed. They're a half game up on Portland right now, who's 26-22. Pels are 26-21. Denver's 24-23, so the Pels are 2 up on the 8th seed and 3 games up on the 9th seed from the Los Angeles Clippers, who are 23-24. That's good. They're gaining some ground away from that 9th seed, which is what you want to see. They're also only a game back of the 5th seed right now, with OKC sitting there at 27-20. And then maybe you try and set your sights up a tier ahead at Minnesota, who's 31-19. But don't forget, Minnesota's pretty much worked New Orleans whenever they've played this year. So I don't know if that's going to be a real reasonable thing to catch. But that 5th seed is certainly, you know, in play and a possibility. And you'd like to see the Pelicans get as high of a seed as possible to try and show some positivity, show that they're headed on the right track to potential free agent targets. One of which apparently is maybe LeBron James. I'm not going to be irresponsible and claim this or anything like that, but apparently that's what was said on the Dan Le Batard show, that LeBron really likes it, what's going on here in New Orleans, and is maybe going to take a look at them in free agency this upcoming year. Anyway, that's your fun, weird fact for the day. So the standings are there. The Pelicans are in good position. They're a playoff team. I think we know this. They're likely not going to fall out. It would take something quite surprising. But I don't think people are still ready to believe in this team as anything other than first-round fodder. You get a win against the Houston Rockets, people are going to come around, they'll pack the Smoothie King Center, and we'll kind of go from there and take flight, or that was 2 years ago, I guess, do it big. That's really what it was. But this is a win that I think was very important. Show you can win when you just can't get going or what you want, you know, but the team did look engaged defensively, and that's some of the biggest struggle and most important things that they do. So good win for the Pelicans, 101-96. I like this win better than the win over the Chicago Bulls. So before we get to some more national NBA stuff, look, the Super Bowl is finally here, and I want to tell you guys about mybookie.ag, the number one rated online sportsbook. With your fantasy football season over, the NBA headed towards the All-Star break, the way to use your sports knowledge to win cash is by betting at mybookie. The sportsbook that makes it easy to deposit and even easier to cash out your winnings fast. They have odds on everything, live betting, and even an all-new prop builder. You get to create your own bet slips. Bet exactly how you want. Say you want to bet your friends that LeBron will score 30 points and have 10-plus assists. Why not bet it at mybookie.ag and put your money where your mouth is? Bet from your desktop, tablet, or their world-class mobile site that lets you bet anytime, anywhere. And MyBookie offers fastest, no-hassle payouts when you win. Where you wager is just as important as what you wager. If you can't get your money out of there, it does you no good. So join now, and MyBookie will match your deposit with up to a 50% bonus. Just use the promo code LOCKEDONNBA when making your account. Visit MyBookie.ag today and bet on the internet's favorite sports book, where you play, you win, you get paid. So I want to quickly touch on the Cleveland Cavaliers and what is going on there, because they are a mess. For a team that's 27-19, 3rd seed in the Eastern Conference, this is a very disappointing and underwhelming season from them. They are one of the better offensive teams, like the Pelicans, but they're also the 2nd worst defense in the league. And are just in complete disarray. They've actually lost six out of their last seven games right now. So they're on a bad downslide. And it sounds like after practice the other day, this is according to ESPN.com reports, they have after practice on, I think, Sunday or Monday, one of those two, they had a kind of a players-only meeting kind of where they just all accused Kevin Love. They said in that game against OKC, which, again, I think was Saturday, that Kevin Love had left the game early with an illness, wasn't feeling well, I guess, and then skipped or missed practice on Sunday, leading up to their game against the San Antonio Spurs the other night. And so they're accusing him of faking the illness just to leave the game or practice. And against OKC, they lost 148-124. So a really ugly loss for the Cleveland Cavaliers. And look, there's a lot of problems there. Kevin Love defensively is absolutely one of them. But the guy was also named to an all-star team. So you got to wonder how bad he's been. They're playing him out of position at center, and he is basically not able to defend those guys. He's never been a great defender. The dude's averaging 18.4 points per game, 9.4 rebounds per game. So he's doing enough. He's also making over two threes per game, so stretching the court for him. But I can't imagine coworkers of mine coming up to me and saying, "You faked being sick and like left us hung out to dry," when I'm sure he wants to win just as much and not just leave the game to kind of get away from the debacle that was going on. But they still accused him of that, and he had to defend himself, which I guess is really the only time he's done much defending all season long. I wish I had like sound effects for that. So, you know, he has to defend himself against these guys. There is no way that this is going to end well for the Cavaliers. I talked earlier on in the season about this at some point, I remember, and everyone basically just said, "Hey, like, wait till LeBron kind of rights the ship." I said, "Nah, there's deeper issues here than we've seen, partially because I just don't know how they fix the defense." And then when you get Isaiah Thomas back, who has not looked good offensively, by the way, which is also too kind of, it's understandable that he doesn't look great offensively, still getting his legs back. But I don't know what you do with him on defense. And injury or not, when you look at some of the things he does on there, it's really just size and a couple of other things, just poor mechanics defensively, not like Drew Holiday whatsoever, who's amazing defensively right now. So they're a mess. Like, you have to look at almost trading Isaiah Thomas, and that Kyrie Irving trade, which I was a huge fan of for the Celtics, looks even worse for the Cleveland Cavaliers right now. And just, wow, they're a mess, and LeBron obviously isn't going to go back there next year. I would be stunned about that. He's got them their title. He can leave, and I don't think anyone's going to burn his jersey or anything like that. Again, I don't think he's coming to New Orleans, as I was asked about on the radio on WWL last night. But hey, we can dream, can't we? So to indulge in this is what we'll call it. You know, if LeBron does say he wants to come to New Orleans, the salaries are going to be a bit of a mess because you're re-signing Cousins, unless Cousins maybe wants to take less, though I don't think that that'll be the case. You've got Anthony Davis. You've got Drew Holiday. You're going to have to move some people in some capacity to make room for the King. And the Pels will find a way to do it. It won't be easy. You might not have future first-round picks for years and years and years and years. And you're probably going to have to lose a guy like Etuan Moore as well and start hitting the bargain basement again, which the Pelicans have kind of already been doing. But it's certainly they can get it done should that be the case. But look, I heard the rumors. That sounds fun. But don't get too excited about LeBron James coming to New Orleans. So I'm going to plug it again. Don't forget, check out LockedOnPelicans.com if you haven't read what's going on with the Pelicans in the third quarter. Why are the starters playing well to start the game but not after the break? We've got that covered and more over at LockedOnPelicans.com. So let's call this segment a bit of a trade deadline primer. The trade deadline coming up on February 8th. So we're, what, about 2 weeks or so away from that now. So this is when the rumors are going to start heating up. And we're going to start hearing more and more about people who are on the block. We've heard a little bit about it with Kemba Walker. And there's still a few dominoes waiting to fall. The Cavs are always heavily rumored to be linked with everyone, George Hill over in Sacramento being the latest. But what about the Pelicans? We know they need to make a move. There's a limited war chest of assets, basically a Diallo, Frank Jackson, which aren't really good assets right now. Diallo can't even get on the court when the Pelicans need a third big. So look, he's not worth much. He's not worth a first round pick. He might not even be worth a second round pick, depending on, you know, what the opposing team thinks of him and how they rank and value him. He was a second round pick when he came in. He was very raw. He hasn't shown anything in the NBA minutes that he's played other than still being very raw. He's looked good in the D League, but that only gets you so far. You still got to do it against top-level competition. And when he's on the court here, and he's had kind of chances, not tons of burn or minutes, but he's been out there, he hasn't been able to produce and basically hasn't been able to get out there and not foul. So I don't rank him as a big trade asset. Frank Jackson hasn't played this season. He would have had first-round NBA talent if it wasn't for the injury he sustained prior to the NBA draft. He's since gotten another injury that doesn't look good. He's not worth a first round. He's probably not worth a second round target a second round draft pick right now either. So those aren't really going to be in deals as anything other than kind of sweetener. They're not going to anchor a deal. Oshik and Ajinsa are untradeable unless you attach a first round pick with them just to move them. Basically, you need to think of the deal as Omer Oshik plus a first round pick for nothing. And that's what it would take to get that deal done. Same thing for Alexi Ajinsa. So that leaves you with just future first round picks, maybe Etuan Moore, maybe Rajon Rondo, though he's not going to be tradable. No one wants him at this point. Potentially Ian Clark, if you're trading with a contender, like a guard for a big, something like that. But for the most part, the Pelicans' assets are very, very limited. And it's going to make it hard to get a deal done with also being right up against the hard cap and not having much room there. So the approach the Pelicans are going to take, and this is the approach I think they're going to take, because look, there's a lot of issues everywhere on this team. You can make a case for any position. If you want to claim they need a third big and that's their biggest priority and what they should target on the trade deadline, cool, I'm on board. We saw the need for it the other night when Omer Oshik was put in for 3 minutes while Davis and Cousins were on the bench. Not ideal. You'd like to get someone else there. And then also maybe just to get a guy to take some minutes from Davis and Cousins and give them a bit more of a rest because they are in the top 11 in minutes played per game. You want to make a case for the wing position where it's really just Darius Miller with Etuan Moore playing out of position. That's good too. Makes sense. You know, Solomon Hill will be coming back, provide a little bit of reinforcement there. But if you talk the wing position, you can have him play the backup big spot, a backup four, small ball four, which he might be better suited for, at least offensively, compared to the three position. So it kind of helps you out in both ways there. I understand. And plus, he's going to be on a minutes restriction, we assume, once he comes back, and maybe he doesn't get a full workload for the rest of the year. So the wing position certainly could use a whole lot more depth. You'd also make the case for a guard position, too. You've got Drew Holiday, who's solidly in there. You've got Etuan Moore, who's solidly in there. And after that, it is a little bit iffy. Jameer Nelson has not been good for the Pelicans for the past month or two. Rajon Rondo, we've talked about it, just every way you look at it just isn't helping this team despite how badly we'd like him to be. And then you've got Ian Clark, who's in and out of the rotation, whose minutes are inconsistent because he doesn't have the trust of the coaching staff. So maybe you needed to get another guard that stabilizes the guard rotation a little bit, particularly on the defensive side of the ball. Makes a ton of sense. I get it. So the good thing is this makes the Pelicans more flexible. They can target any position, and they're still going to improve. And I think the approach they're going to be taking based on conversations I've had is they're going to look at the trade market. They're going to determine the best NBA rotation player, regardless of position, that they can get. And they're going to go out and try and get him and try and bring him here in New Orleans, knowing that it'll help shore up this rotation and give them a little bit more depth no matter what they do. So that's definitely a good thing for the Pelicans. It's a good position to be in because they can kind of go anywhere they need to. I'm going to disappoint you guys. I probably teased it wrong. We're not going to talk about specific trade targets today. We're going to do that in the weeks to come because we got to fill content somehow. But look, they're in a good position to make a move. They likely will trade that future first round pick. But if there's no one really out there that they like, they will save that and use it in the upcoming NBA draft or trade it during the draft. Could be more valuable then. Once we get closer towards free agency, we have an idea of what's going on there. So that isn't necessarily the worst thing. The Pelicans stand pat, they still are 5 games above 500. Now, this could change in 2 weeks if they don't turn this corner and they drop back down and they have a couple bad losses. But as of now, I think things are kind of steady on Airline Drive. There's no situation like what went on in Milwaukee with Jason Kidd getting fired. I've had 2 segments on national NBA stories this week, and we haven't even touched on Jason Kidd. And something that maybe we'll talk about briefly tomorrow, because so much went on Monday in the NBA. This is why it's fun to follow the league, to cover the league, to be on Twitter, and see all this stuff happening in real time, and all the jokes being made. So the Pels are in a good position at the trade deadline. And let me know what you think, what position they should target. Let me know on Twitter. It's at Nola Jake and at Locked On Pels, because they do definitely have a number of different directions they can go. So that's going to do it for this edition of Locked On Pelicans. Very good win for the team last night against the Charlotte Hornets. Much better than the historic performance DeMarcus Cousins put up in that double overtime win against the Chicago Bulls. Nice to see them win in a way that we don't normally see them do. So good on you, Pels. Show us you're turning the corner. Get it done against the Houston Rockets tomorrow night. We'll have that preview for you all on tomorrow's edition of Locked On Pelicans. We'll touch on the Jason Kidd firing and why I think that was definitely a good thing, and why, even though I've been critical of coaching and saying, yeah, I could see making a change, I don't think the Pelicans are in a similar situation as Milwaukee was. So thank you all for listening today. As always, I'm your host, Jake Madison, at Nola Jake on Twitter, and I'll be back with you all tomorrow.